This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart, and you are listening to the one place where you can get local talk in the Mid-Willamette Valley, focusing on Salem and Kaiser and Greater Marion and Polk County. We're going to tackle initiatives in the news. We're going to tackle individuals and institutions and all that good stuff. So thanks for being with us this noon hour. We have a few things to unravel from a couple of days ago. We had the mayor of City of Salem in, and we were talking with Chuck Bennett a little bit about growth, a little bit about Salem in terms of the comprehensive plan. So I want you all to understand this comprehensive plan and the danger that we're all in right now, because the mayor did tell us off the air, and we tried to say it during the episode, is that the people who are showing up are really passionate, and they're often single-issue voters. They're not pragmatic. This is what I want for my city. He said every person that testified, and this will go into the planning of the comprehensive plan, talked about climate change. That's a concern, because this means that this will be the number one driving public policy issue for Salem for decades. So let's not even talk about climate change itself. Let's not talk about climate crisis, global warming, or whatever you want to call it. Let's talk about whether or not that is the number one issue that should guide all planning, decision making, and policy making over the next two generations. Your thoughts? If you want to weigh in, feel free to call at 503-393-1430. All right. So the other thing that plays into this is growth. And I know as Dave is coming to join us, he's been on remote, and hopefully he can join in, because I want to quiz him. Growth. How fast do you think Oregon's growing? And I think if you asked different people from different political stripes, you'll get different answers. So I, of course, turned to Uncle Google and got some information from U.S. Census, from Wikipedia, from the city of Salem, and so forth. And what's really important, because, you know, there's all these warnings about urban sprawl, and should we worry about urban sprawl? And are you worried about urban sprawl? Since 1970, so just prior to the current land use system going into effect in Oregon, where we formed the urban growth boundaries and we set these boundaries to protect farmland and timberland and so forth. What's the percentage rate? Dave, what do you think?
30%.
Per year, annual rate. Annual rate per year for the last, you know, for almost 50 years.
3%.
It's not a bad guess. Not a bad guess. It's actually just a smidgen over 2.
And that's okay.
That's my question to everybody is, are we really seeing unrestrained growth? I mean, all of us need to be armed with that number. Like, what are you talking about? You're throwing out this boy who cried wolf kind of alarm that this unrestrained growth and we're going to explode in urban. Like, for the last 50 years, we've only grown an average of 2%, and a good chunk of that is just a natural birth rate, right? It's not like
that's true.
All these Californians are coming in here, and people from Arkansas and Hawaii, and everybody's coming in here. I mean, it's 2%. I mean, it's not even 2.1. When I say it's a smidgen over 2, I mean it's just a smidgen over 2% over the last 50 years. However, since 2010, so since the bottom of the recession, say, the growth rate's just been 1.1%. 1.1%.
That's pretty small.
Yeah. There was at least one website that was saying in America, at least, and this is a pretty broad number, so take it for what it's worth, but a natural birth rate of how many more people are being born than are naturally passing away is about 0.81%. So, you know, you got 0.8% of your 1.1%, just people having babies. And that needs to play into the conversation about how much is Salem going to grow? Because you're going to have some people who just don't want Salem to grow, right? And unfortunately, those people show up at public policy meetings, folks, and they don't want to build you a bridge, right?
This is
true.
They don't want to open
any new lanes. They don't want to expand the infrastructure for transportation to eliminate gridlock. Not one person brought up gridlock as an issue in planning for the next 40 years. If that bothers you, then get on the City of Salem website and look for Our Salem in the process and start coming to public meetings. Or email in your testimony or in your input. Because when you email into a process like this, it becomes part of the public record. And staff is forced to, the staff of the city is forced to report on how many people are favoring X, Y, and Z. If everybody there has climate change as their issue, then that becomes the driving force about everything we plan having to do with transportation and our park system and everything in the city of Salem. And like the mayor said, it's 40 years since we've done it. Do you want that to be the number one issue for planning for the 40 years in Salem, right? What do you think?
That's crazy.
So I was going back. 1970, we had about 68,000 people in Salem. So it's grown to about 170 now. So, and that's the other thing is when we talk about, and the mayor talked about this, and I know it sets off alarms for the anti-growth people because he's like, well, we're going to grow, you know, 50,000 people and so forth. And they're like, well, we don't want them to grow. We don't want the city to grow. Stop building those houses kind of thing. Can't we just cap it? There's an axiom that if you're not growing, you're dying.
That's true. Right? Yep.
So if a community doesn't have an opportunity to grow, then it is probably slowly shrinking and dying away. And two, hello, let's just have some babies. Growth rate factor of 1%. 1%. 2017, take us out to 2035. 2035 used to sound like a long time ago. Away. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
Now we can pretty much just say, hey, it's 15 years from now, 16 years from now.
Remember the song 20 in the year 2025?
Yeah. Yes.
Seems so long ago. It's right around the corner now.
Very funny. So 2035, assuming just a 1% growth rate, we're over 203,000 people. Okay. So close to another 35,000 people within the city limits, 35,000 people. Where are you going to put them? They're going to go in West Salem, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
In the downtown core.
And in the downtown core.
They're building a lot down there.
If there's four people in a household, and most do not, right? That's another, say, 9,000 residences, either apartment, either multifamily or single family. That's another 9,000 of them. Where are they going to go? It's not unrestrained growth, folks, and don't let the conversation go there. It's not urban sprawl. It's just natural growth. And to the, let me go back a little bit. I was part of interviewing a city manager in the 2000s, and there was a gentleman who came, and he was really not familiar with the whole land use system and the whole planning system. We have long-range planning employees and so forth, and departments. Well, he came from a community that's landlocked, right? It was surrounded on all sides by other city limits, which you see a lot in, you know, suburbia and major urban areas. So, like Sunnyvale, California, where I was just there. Sunnyvale, California, surrounded by San Jose and Santa Clara and Mountain View and Cupertino. It can't grow anywhere. Well, Salem can grow, but it's going to grow into the hills or it's going to grow into farmland. But it's a different situation. I think there are people out there that want to drive the agenda that we can just draw this urban growth boundary and it never moves. You know what I mean?
That's a no.
So this urban growth boundary was drawn in, or not this one, but the urban growth boundary concept was put into place in the 70s, but it was never meant to not be adjusted. So it's very, very hard to get your urban growth boundary changed with the state, and ours includes Salem and Kaiser, of course. So our Oregon folks, pay attention, get some representatives from you, from your family, from your organization, from your advocacy, and show up. We need to talk about this. It's important. So All right. I want to talk a little bit more about the $5 million that came from Urban Renewal. It's going into the police facility. And later in the hour, we want to talk about a little bit about how the trade war with President Trump and China affects us locally here and in terms of our agricultural sector. That's a big article and very important for us to acknowledge in the Salem Reporter today. This is Brent DeHart. I'm here with Dave Barn. We're going to be right back after this, and we're going to talk about where'd the $5 million come from and who paid the price. Stick with us on KYKN 1430. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by our friends at Color Tile of Salem. And welcome back to Newsmakers. Brent, we have ticket giveaway a little bit later on this hour for the Sublimity Festival. That's coming up September 6th through the 8th.
Oh, of course, we've got the fair coming up tomorrow.
Starts tomorrow, right?
Yeah. But all of these fairs are pretty awesome all over town. You see them in Almsville and Sublimity. And of course, when you and I have been at the Marion and Polk County Fairs, It's really fun to get out there in these areas and explore a little bit and drop a few dollars in their community, get something to eat. It's fun. Good stuff.
Good food.
All right, we'll give that away. Just following up on what I was saying before the break, really quickly, the mayor was talking about the money that's coming from Urban Renewal. And if you know, we should bring up our old podcast about how Urban Renewal works as a tool. But my point to the mayor was this was money that could have been spent in other projects in the downtown core. And he's defensive about it, and I understand, because you know what? I'm not going to tell you or the listener that it's the wrong decision. I don't know that I would make any different decision, but we have to acknowledge, we cannot hide, nor should we, that the cost overruns for the police facility are costing other opportunities. So, for instance, you know who wants to expand? Downtown core that could use Urban Renewal dollars now that they have 15 years of shining success? Conference Center. Right?
Yeah.
The Conference Center was built to expand. Right there in the southwest corner where there's an artwork and a plaza that was designed to, when the growth occurs, that we can expand and do more there, more hotel beds, bigger conferences and meetings and so forth. So that is an opportunity cost. And we should know, like, well, number one priority is get the police facility built, presumably, and that we can't really do anything about the cost of overruns. But we are absolutely making a choice. $5 million. You know what that would do as far as, say, River City water recreation infrastructure? You know, docks and swimming areas and safety things. And, you know, we could really blow up the opportunity for river recreation. That's part of it. It could be fiber optic infrastructure throughout the downtown core. It could be any number of things. It could be a number of the projects they're talking about when they're consolidating the urban growth, I mean, the United Gospel Mission site and so forth. Anyway, yes, they needed to pull it. Yes, the mayor was saying it's justifiable because X, Y, and Z. But don't say that it's not being taken away from other opportunities and other priorities downtown core. It just is. So anyway, and I don't think the mayor should be defensive about it, but I don't think he should be trying to hide the fact that, yeah, this money was not earmarked for a police facility.
So it was kind of like a slush fund.
Oh man. Yeah. And it shouldn't be.
I know it shouldn't be.
Shows.
Yeah, I know, but he did say, you know, just like you pointed out, it wasn't earmarked for anything else.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Come on, Brent.
Well,
it was his slush fund. It was extra money that they had available to use.
Urban Renewal.
State statute should never
be a slush fund, because every dollar that comes in is supposed to be accountable and assigned to a goal and a project. So if the project's not in there, let's say let's say it's fiber optic cable. Mm-hmm. If that's not in the plan, you have to amend the plan and authorize it and go through a public process with public hearings and so forth. You can't just say, hey, we've got an extra $5 million. Let's do this now. And we ran into that on the Portland Road in the North Gateway Urban Renewal Area, where
yes,
some people wanted transportation and beautification improvements along, like the plan said. And that's where the neighbors, they weren't thinking economic development. The city leaders were thinking economic development and the jobs. But the neighbors were saying, yeah, but we want beautification, you know, and improvements along, you know, sidewalks and along the corridor, Portland Road. And that's what the plan document says. And that's where we ended up with a rub. But anyway, I want everybody just to be aware, you know, it's they're taking urban renewal dollars and it's not an unlimited fund and it doesn't just replenish itself. That's money that was scheduled to come in order to enact a certain project.
Here's where I think they have that issue. You and I talked about it. The city council is on the board for the urban renewal. And they're the ones that also authorized the police center to be built. And they had a deficit that they wanted or needed to cover. And they did. They wanted to do it, I think, without raising taxes for it or going back to the voters to vote on it. They had this slush fund. They used it. That's what I think.
Yeah. And I can't say that it's sinister. It's a lot of practicality because theoretically the city and the urban renewal district are all have the same priorities. And, you know, they're trying to accomplish the same goals. And so it's fairly common. It's not like they're doing something untoward. That doesn't usually happen. But, you know, it's just something the voters should all be aware of, that it they are the same body, in effect. And the only thing that separates them is the gavel, because the mayor will close this meeting of the city council or urban renewal area, and then he'll hit the gavel again and say, now opening the meeting four, and there'll be a second agenda. And things that happen between the city and the urban renewal area require an intergovernmental agreement. Just like if the city public works department has agreement with transit, with Marin County Transit, for sharing costs of bus pullouts. I'm just making that up, right? Mm-hmm. So they're going to share the cost. They create an intergovernmental agreement in order to be able to do that project together and share the costs. The same is true with the city of Salem and its own urban renewal district, even though it's the same elected policymakers doing it. All right. I'm off of that now.
You sure?
you want to hammer some more?
No, I think we're done with it.
All right. Hey, in the news, good old Warren Franklin sent me this, and I thought it was really fascinating. And it's having to do with where Oregon ranks in its transportation sector as far as its roads and bridges. And so a research group sent out a press release and so forth. And according to them, we're not doing too badly. We're ranked certainly in the top 20% of states in terms of how our transportation system is scored. So we're actually 12th in the nation, out of 50, not bad, overall cost effectiveness and condition. This is the Reason Foundation, in case you want to Google it, the Reason Foundation. It's an annual highway report. So here's where we scored well. 12th in the nation in dealing with structurally deficient bridges. So as big as our project seems to be and as much money that we have yet to spend, we're 12th in the nation, and most states are in worse shape than we are. Only 17th in traffic congestion. We'll take that to mean they're averaging Klamath Falls with Portland, right? Because I think Portland's got to be up there all in itself. But overall, for the state, 17th in traffic congestion, 23rd in urban interstate pavement condition, and 34th in overall fatality rate. So only fatality rate really brings us down, because we're worse than the average state in terms of overall fatality rate. So, and in spending, we're 21st in the nation in total spending per mile, and 13th. So we're, you know, apparently we are prioritizing transportation infrastructure spending more than the average state.
But it doesn't show.
What's that?
It doesn't show.
It doesn't show. I don't know.
Gridlock.
I was driving last summer through a few eastern states. I'm thinking, oh, yeah, these roads are kind of not so great.
I don't know. I've driven back on the East Coast as well, and I loved their roads. But
well, let's talk about who was great. North Dakota was great. They scored really high.
Mm-hmm. Florida's pretty good.
First, by the way. Yeah.
Georgia's pretty good.
And who else came in the top five?
Tennessee.
Virginia was in the top five, top three, actually, Missouri, and then Maine and Kentucky. Those are the top five states scoring according to this foundation.
So where's Georgia or Tennessee?
I don't have the whole list, but The worst, I have the bottom, the bottom ones.
Tell me the bottom ones. I'll avoid those states at all costs.
Hawaii, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Alaska. It's got to be hard to maintain roads in Alaska,
yeah,
right?
No kidding.
And New Jersey.
How is that possible? They have so many people there. Why wouldn't they be able to maintain their roads?
Good question.
And because Hawaii? What the heck?
Maybe because their public policy priorities are trying to create congestion and stop global warming. I don't know.
Yeah, that's it.
I don't know. We're doing better, though, in Oregon than California. They're down to 43rd. I mean, California just has a dickens of a problem with its spending, and it can't collect enough taxes to do the jobs. Washington's 37th. Idaho's right in there. He's right next to us at 13th. Nevada, 27th. So for Oregon to come in 12th, we'll take it.
Yeah,
right?
that's pretty impressive. Consider we have those studs and things like that for several months a year. Destroys our roads.
Yeah, and you've got long stretches of roads in less populated areas that they still have to be maintained. They still get snowed and rained upon. And you got to maintain those, and there's not a density of population base to cover them. So,
true.
So as much as we might be critical of the legislature, so this is where you got to give them kudos, because in the last close to 20 years, I think, the Democrats and the Republicans have come together in terms of infrastructure. There has been a Connect Oregon grant program, a Connect Oregon funding program. And it's not just roads, but that's also marine, air, rail, all of these things, types of transportations. They put together transportation packages, and they've done a good job. They've done a good job in that regard, having to be bipartisan to make the infrastructure thing move. And so we'll give them kudos where it's due, right?
Yep, pat on the back. All right.
Anyway, I'm always happy to see good infrastructure, and glad that we've been able to get a lot of it done with a bipartisan effort. And we didn't get much of it this year, but 2 years ago we did. About the only thing good coming out of that session, I think.
Maybe they can do it again.
All right, let's take a break, and we're going to come back in. I think it's time that we listen to some people. So let's fish into the perspective of Cowboy Ron and Sergeant Mike. What do you think?
Yes.
Well, let's bring them in and see what they have to say today about the world and how it should be. Stick with us. This is Brent Tahart. I'm here with Dave Bourne, and you are listening to KYKN.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent Tahart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by our friends at Sylvan Learning Center. It's time. It's time for the boys.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. Joining us in the studio is Sergeant Mike and his cohort and his partner in crime, Cowboy Ron. Hi, gentlemen. What's on your mind today?
How you doing, Brent?
I am excellent.
I got a question for you.
Oh, boy.
What are we hearing about Russian influence now on the news?
Nothing.
That's right, because that all got put to bed.
Yeah, Brent, was that a zero? Nothing, right? Zero.
And now they're, so I guess he wasn't guilty of that either. And so they just kind of keep going. So.
Somehow I think it'll never die.
I think you're right. Cowboy Ron's, he's been upset a little bit today about the homeless situation downtown. And he's got a couple of solutions that he'd like to introduce.
What should the world do about it, Cowboy Ron?
Well, I know, probably, Brent, I'll move, I'll move to Montana.
You mean you're going to give up and just move?
No, I'm just cutting up. That was a joke.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Well, I'll tell you what, I came in this morning.
I thought you were going to move them to Montana.
Yeah. Right, we're going to solve it first.
Yeah.
I think we can take care of this. I was telling Sergeant Mike that we put in a bridge from the carousel of the city, Salem, and across the old Boise Cascade property, and we pointed it out to Brown's Island, Minnow Island. Well, Minnow Island was the ranchy bean yard that turned into the landfill, and is still a landfill, and we're taking some materials there. And then we had the Gilmore, Don Gilmore family that took over after the Browns, Minnow Brown. And Don Gilmore did a wonderful job there in his beans, and as did Mr. Ranchy and all the people, all the kids of Salem. We all picked there and got money for our school clothes. So we've got lots of ground out there, and so what I think would be a good solution is just put them over the Peter Courtney Bridge and fence out Middle Brown. There's some good old fields out there next to the river, and the cottonwood trees, they got shade, and start pinning these people up. Because I'll tell you what, we got a problem in Salem, Oregon. I'm afraid to go down the streets after 9 o'clock at night, and if other people are doing the same and complaining the same, we have people coming in to buy firearms, to pack, to carry, to conceal carry, to protect themselves. But I'll tell you what, City of Salem, I know you're aware of the problem we have, and we've made efforts to clean up the old Keith Brown complex underneath the bridges and so on. This is a horrendous problem that needs to be addressed now. The council needs to stop all this expansion and these different ideas of amphitheaters and the wild spending they're doing.
Look out.
And look out, Sergeant. Here we go. But I'll tell you what, you need to just slow down, stop, maintain the streets of the city of Salem, and we got to address this problem so our citizens of Salem, Oregon, are safe to use a street at night.
I tell you, I like a lot of that, but I am so pleased with our riverfront park that we did something with that. And all the festivals and things that go on down there is really, really, I think it's pretty darn cool. And but you don't do too much at night down there anymore. And I also like the condos and apartments they're building and the business offices. I'm just so glad to see that. Of course, that's not city doing. That's us doing that.
And some of that's federal money, yeah.
And but I mean, people are buying those things to live in and so on and so forth, and businesses are operating there. And it's created a really new a new district, is what.
And they're doing well. They just took down the old Bob Hinkle building right across from Umpqua. Did you see all the rebar and the concrete and that? My God, what a job. And then the flume that's covering the Mill Creek and Boise Cascade property, they just about have that all demoed. And what's interesting, Sarge, is as a builder working for Meredith Mills, I poured almost all that concrete.
No kidding.
Yeah, I did all the the spanning of the creek, yes.
That was that was big doing. So when was that? What years were you building?
In the 70s.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
are you 60, responsible 70. For no longer having a salmon run up that creek because you put too much cement in there?
Well, you know what, Brent, it's really interesting. I think that salmon run could come back pretty easily. They just stopped stocking it. It wasn't a natural run. It was, you know, years ago, but that was a planted salmon. And I believe it was one of those genetic blends, but we enjoyed it because they'd all come up to the prison and we'd all go down there and watch them spawn, and they'd go up to Turner and Almsville and do well. Yeah, but we missed that one. As a young man, I caught salmon right there in the slough right next to Boise Cascade.
With your hands?
By hand.
Yeah.
Pitchforks.
Oh, pitchforks. Wow.
Yeah, we were.
That's fishing right
there.
Yeah,
we were pretty bad.
It cooked up good, though, didn't it?
Oh, my gosh. They were good, you know, and we'd sneak them in, and we did what little boys do.
So what do you think the solution for the homeless issue? I mean, it's been ongoing since the dawn of man.
Well, you know, I tell you what, it's been going on. It's not going to stop.
Right. Homelessness.
Well, I'm more concerned about it's a big issue, but what about the ones that are 30? We have to have somebody determine what they're, if we've lost them, Are their minds burnt out? We have different disease of dementia and Alzheimer's, but most of this is, I think most of it's drug related.
I think so too. You know, the pastor at my church was on a working with the police and city and talking about, you know, what kind of problems there are so that you know what to what to fix.
Right.
And they found that if guys were maybe over 35, they were already done.
Yeah.
There was no fixing left. It.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they can walk around, do things, but, yeah. I mean, their brain is just not going to operate normally. And,
well, Mike, have you seen them underneath the bridge? I mean, mm-hmm. I use that road quite a bit right underneath the Marion Street Bridge.
Me too.
You know, they're alongside the piers, and they're raising their hands and yelling, and they don't have a mind left.
Right. I have to go slow when I'm going by there, and I don't like to go slow.
So but what's the solution?
But the answer, I think the solution would be maybe let a church take care of it, a private nonprofit. But you'd have to have it probably opened up volunteer to have them come in and to go into that fence out there that we're going to build on Brown Island.
Oh,
yeah.
You look at all the humanity rights we have now. I don't think that somebody's out of their mind is going to sue us.
No, they won't.
For giving them a roof over their
for
head.
For helping them out.
And a shower.
Right.
And maybe a food bank. You know, the Union Gospel Mission does a horrendous job. We take food from our picnics and stuff down there. And
you bet. You
look at the, come down and look at the mission does.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing a great job, and they've done for years.
Yep.
We do things with Marion Pope Food Share, the station does.
Right.
And I've gone over there on different occasions. And to watch that place operate, they never know what's coming. And yet they got to get it out of the door and get it out of the door fast because they got a distribution network to finish it up with.
Exactly. Well, get back to it. You know, our police are doing a good job in Salem. I would hate to be the chief of police right now and having all the calls and the demand for the police to show up. I drove down here a half hour ago, and they're arresting a guy in front of the Chevron station on 13th Street. It looked like a homeless guy. They were cuffing him. But if we had, you know, I'd like to see a zero tolerance, and I'd like to have a place, a center for them to go to, whether it's a mission or whatever. I'm homeless. I'm out of a job. I don't have a place to sleep, and then find a place for them. But I do think this problem is in the city of Salem, and we can't be a sanctuary state or a sanctuary community. We can't say, come in here and hang out so our kids can't ride your bicycle to Chemeketa Street.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they're going to get harassed or they're injured or...
raped.
Yeah. And we have that problem. Look at California. They're broke. They're saying, come on in. You know, over the border, we have people that are that won't even turn their dog out at night.
Right.
Next to the border.
California is number one homeless state.
Yes. Well, look where they are financially, and look at the citizens of California. Their taxation per income per household taking care of the welfare state. Their welfare state's bigger than the working
Correct.
Population.
Correct.
That's where California.
We can't get there. That's for
there's
sure.
a percentage. So I don't want Salem like that. I want to we're going to have to bite it in the bud right now.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. Sergeant Mike, Cowboy Ron, and we'll be back, Brent.
We'll be back in just a minute. We're going to talk about how the local agricultural community is being affected by the Trump tariffs. So stick with us here on Newsmakers 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape. And it's giveaway time, Brent.
Let's give something away.
Yeah. Friday, September 6th through Sunday, September 8th, it's the Sublimity Harvest Festival. And we have a pair of tickets for you to go right now for any one of those days for free at 503-393-1430. We'll take the first caller, one pair of tickets today. We'll give away more pairs on Monday and Tuesday next week. 503-393-1430 for two tickets to the Sublimity Harvest Festival. All right.
All right. Well, thanks for being with us. I'm glad you could join us during our lunch hour today. And boy, what an hour. A little bit of Cowboy Ron, huh, today?
Right.
We started talking about road conditions. We talked about urban growth. And we talked about our overall population growth. And, of course, the urban growth and the urban growth boundary and the decisions we're making downtown with millions and millions of dollars. Now let's shift a little bit and go out in the country, since we have a lot of listeners that are outside the Salem-Kaiser boundaries. And you know what? Those people have a huge economic impact on the entire region. And I'm talking about the agricultural sector.
Yeah, they're all out there harvesting right now.
Yeah, let's hope they're in their John Deere's and Kubota's and got tuned to KYKN and listening as they're out harvesting, right?
That's right.
So we don't talk about national things too often. Every now and then it gets into our conversation. And definitely when it comes to the president and the tariffs and China going back and forth and said, yeah, we're going to hit you with tariffs, but yeah, but I'm going to hit you with tariffs. And this trade war, as they call it, it really does have an effect on companies right here in the Valley. I know I have a relationship with a company that manufactures things in China, and they found out, unfortunately, hey, what we're manufacturing is getting hit by tariffs, and suddenly they're not competitive to sell their product in their marketplace. And then suddenly they are looking and scrambling for other manufacturing opportunities in Malaysia, in Taiwan, in Vietnam, to get it out of China so it's not part of this trade war.
Hmm.
And if this thing persists, see, people make those decisions based on this tax situation, and it does hurt China. Right?
Sure, sure.
They were like, well, I can't really afford to manufacture in China, so I'm not going to hire you because I can use this Malaysian company, or I can use this, you know, Korean company, or, you know what I mean?
They would have that would have the same effect in China as it did when our companies up and moved from here and went to China. Right? It put all those people out of work.
Right. So it definitely follows this trade. This trade war, and businesses are making decisions upon it. And it's not just today's tariff. It's also, are we going to invest in our manufacturing in China? Are we going to have it grown there to begin with when it's so uncertain what our final product will cost because we don't know what tariffs will be, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, and China's got to know that as well, and we should recognize it. So, but the tariff includes agricultural goods. So in this area, we're exporting a lot of hazelnuts. We're exporting a lot of wheat and so forth. An article, by the way, it's in the Salem Reporter. And Blake Rowe, he's the CEO of Oregon Wheat Growers League. And he's saying it's getting very serious issue. So let's see. New tariffs, $34 billion worth of new tariffs that Trump did in July. Right? Means that everything from China is going to be 25% more expensive. So about 21% of all U.S. imports, of everything that comes through the borders that U.S. Families and businesses buy, 21% of it's coming from China. That's pretty big.
That is huge.
And then there's a question right there with trade. With trade policy to begin with, is do you want any one country to be a fifth of all of your imports?
No.
So, I mean, the people that crunch these numbers, they like to put them in bite-sized pieces. So they say the average American household, in the course of a year, they're paying $600 for these products. And the tariffs, which haven't even gone into effect yet, mind you, they've just been announced, but it would raise that to about $1,000 per average household in America.
Wow.
That's according to JP Morgan. So I don't know. That's way beyond my spreadsheet capability. Anyway, and then we bear it down into Oregon. So what's going out from the Willamette Valley? Wheat, of course. Soybeans and corn are also being affected as far as how many are going to China. But we don't grow very many soybeans. You know, that's going to be hurting Iowa more than us.
Right.
But, you know, those products, they're down 31%.
Hmm.
And that's a statistic out of the Port of Portland. So they are monitoring how much of this product is leaving Portland and going to China, down 31%.
I can't trust Portland's export, though, because they're moving it all up to Seattle or down south to L.A. Port is not really shipping a whole lot of that out anymore.
Well, not in the containers. The container shipping went to zero.
Yeah, that's true. But the grain's still going out.
Ford ships out of Portland. They fell 40%. Well, 40% in 2018, and they're down another 15% this year.
Wow. Yeah. And that's right. The grain elevators are still there, so they're still shipping that out.
Yeah. So also quoted in the article is state economist Scott Lehner, and he's saying, you know, people are in a rush, basically, to get things out before the tariffs hit in. And so right now we haven't seen a decline in how much is being pushed through, but if they're trying to rush and get it through ahead of time, it might not tell the whole story. So back to the wheat. Wheat exports, they're hit because of several trade policy decisions. So 2018, Chinese buyers stopped looking to Oregon because they thought it was going to be hit by a trade war. And so they start looking to buy wheat from Australia and from Canada and from Argentina. And so just the threat and the uncertainty. I mean, sometime I'm going to write a whole series of articles of how uncertainty can kill a business. Uncertainty can really destroy plans and people's willingness to invest. So they're uncertain about what America's going to do with this trade war and what China's going to do in retribution. So, we'll buy from Australia and Canada just because of uncertainty.
Isn't that what we were talking about with our economy as well? Mm-hmm. Just because there is a little uncertainty, they're saying, we're expecting a recession, so we might as well plan for it right now. And it's like, but if we're going gangbusters in our economy, why would you think of recession's coming?
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And I use this picture a lot. I don't know if everybody else can visualize it. You mentioned those long balloons that clowns use to make balloon animals.
Yeah.
Right. So question is, you know, when you squeeze a balloon, you can squeeze right in the middle, but it puffs out somewhere else.
Right.
And so that's the whole thing. We use that analogy when we're talking about like government budgeting and things like that. Well, you could pass $1 billion and say it's all going to the kids, but that doesn't mean you're not going to take money that used to go to the kids and put it somewhere else.
Right.
You just dumped more in and squeeze the balloon, you push it somewhere else. So what's happening here in wheat is now Oregon is trying to find buyers that are not China. So China can buy it from Australia and they can buy it from Canada, but the people who are being supplied by Canada and Australia now need to find a new supplier, and maybe they buy it from Oregon farmers.
Let's hope so.
So they did say the price of wheat is down about $1 a bushel, where it should be. So it also obviously affecting how much they're going to get per bushel and what kind of return on investment they have in the product. As we know, this is a huge hazelnut. Hazelnut has been the growth story. It might be transitioning into cannabis now in coming years. But as far as how many more acreage has been planted in hazelnuts, and the market for hazelnuts is seen as one of the more healthful options for snack foods and so on and so forth. It's been a great growth for the Willamette Valley. So 70% in some years of Oregon hazelnuts exported to China. 70%.
Wow, that's pretty big.
So this is interesting. It's Larry George is the gentleman's name. He owns Northwest Hazelnut Company. And interesting take on this, because he's like, this is hurting, but we really need to have the discussion. Yeah, and I'm paraphrasing. I'll try to get his quotes in here, but he's saying
we're out of time.
We got to go.
Yeah, we got to go.
Maybe we'll get Larry George on the show.
All right.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.